Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every week we have the very best analyst on to break down the film, and Greg joins us now. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, how are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Did you make it through that 9-6 game on Sunday between the Titans and the Jags?
I did, Jonathan. I you know, it's my job, so I have to do that.
Help me with, from what you noticed, the approach with Marcus in the game when he had to enter that game offensively compared to what the plan was or what you thought it was based on the limited time we saw with Gabbert. What stood out to you?
I don't think, to be honest, my guess is it wasn't significantly different. Again, they were playing a really good defensive front. But let's speak to Mariota in particular, because ideally, he's the guy. I mean, I don't know what his status is. I know they brought in Austin Davis, likely because Gabbert's in concussion protocol. But ultimately, what they did with Mariota, and I'm sure it was a function of his injury, was it was very basic. It was short rhythm throws. It was screens. It was play action boot. You know, they didn't ask him to do a lot of things as far as throwing the ball down the field. And I don't know if he was capable of doing that. You may know better than I. But I don't think that they viewed the passing game as the way they were going to win the game.
Right.
What do you think about how they've utilized Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis so far? Have you seen a lot of variation in the schemes and how they run it with both those guys and what they do when both are in?
Well, clearly this week, Chad Henry was the guy. I mean, yep. He had the rushes. I mean, they essentially used him as the hammer in the fourth quarter. But I looked at Henry pretty carefully this week because my sense is, and I could be wrong, maybe it's week to week. I know they've stated that publicly, but it's hard to have running back by committee if you're truly going to have the run game as your foundation. You have to have a back. And I think for right now, with the quarterback situation, they probably feel they need a foundation back. And in their mind, I think it appears Henry's that guy. But what's interesting, I've really studied Henry's profile. I looked at it in this game in terms of the personnel. In this game, I believe he had 18 rushes. 15 of them came with either two or three tight ends on the field. Now, that says a lot. His seasonal profile, he's had 26 rushes with two tight ends on the field, 14 rushes with three tight ends on the field, and only six rushes with three wide receivers on the field, meaning 11 personnel. So when they put Derrick Henry on the field, they are going big. You know, go big or go home. That's what they're doing with Derrick Henry. And, you know, that's clearly their approach. And I think they'll stay with that approach for the most part until their Marcus Mariota is essentially healthy.
Are you surprised that we haven't seen the Deion Lewis screen game pick up yet?
You've seen a little of it. You know, screens are selective. You know, no one runs 10 screens a game, and not 10 screens to the back. I mean, there are wide receiver screens, obviously, but I think I would have expected perhaps to see it a little more, but, you know, it's also the kind of thing that you don't run that often. So we'll see. Well, I guess ultimately what they have to try to do, and every team has to try to do it to some degree, is to get the ball to playmakers. And right now, they're not doing a lot of that.
Corey Davis needs to be a playmaker for this team. What did you see from him in this game against Jacksonville?
Again, he's a victim of what they're doing offensively and of the passing game. Obviously, I think he only caught two balls. He caught the one where Mariota had a move and he threw it to him on third down for about a 12-yard gain for a first down. Then he caught the one where he caught it and he ran for about, 15 yards after the catch. But he doesn't get a ton of targets. Nobody gets a ton of targets. I thought they actually did some good things conceptually in the passing game, because two things you consistently see with their offense, three things really. You see motion, you see stacks and bunches, you see what we call minus and nasty wide receiver splits where they're tighter to the formation, And I think both are a function of Matt LaFleur's NFL background with Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. There were a number of times that wide receivers were open on curl routes, inside curl routes, and the pressure prevented Mariota from delivering the football.
It was pretty early on in first quarter whenever I thought to myself, this Blake Bortles is not the one that played last week against New England. He just missed on a lot of just easy dump-offs. Quick passing game was just very inconsistent. He was exactly what he has been, very, very inconsistent throughout his career, and we saw that.
Well, it's funny because I made the note watching the tape that his lack of precise and consistent ball placement cropped up again in this game. And he missed two third down throws that NFL quarterbacks must make. But I also think that this defense needs to be talked about. Now they're going to have, we'll get to it. They'll have a big test this week, but, they continue to feature multiple front looks out of their nickel. They do a lot of those five across reduced fronts. There's a lot of coverage. I would say that there's more coverage multiplicity than I thought I'd see. They include cover three, cover four, cover two in long yardage. There are some disguise. I think they do a really, really nice job. I thought they did a really nice job with their pressure schemes, particularly using their defensive backs in the schemes.
When they're in nickel, what have you thought of Kenny Vaccaro's play? Has he stood out to you at all?
I mean, I haven't, you know, let's say charted him on every play, but I think he shows up on film, you know, so again, I can't answer that from the standpoint of how he's charted based on what they ask him to do on every play, but I think he stands out. I mean, I think when you watch the Titans, you think they have a good back end. You know, and he's part of the back end. And I think the nice thing about them, clearly Byard is more of the tight end matchup when they do play man, but I think they have two safeties that are interchangeable and that are athletic.
You mentioned the Titans' offensive game plan with Mariota in there and what they were doing. It's tough to criticize a defense that didn't give up a touchdown in a game. But when you look at Jacksonville and you see that Mariota was able to affect them at times with his legs, are you surprised they didn't adjust with a spy on Mariota at some point?
You know, and that's a philosophy question. You know, did he have a couple of runs? Yes. And was there some boot action? And a couple of times I think there was his own read. You know, my sense is they didn't feel like they were being really hurt by the offense. I mean, they didn't give up a lot of points either, Chad. So, I mean, I don't think they were feeling like, wow, this offense is really, you know, getting after us and we better make some changes. You know, it's not like that the Titans put up a lot of yards or a lot of points.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, that so far we have not seen teams have an answer for Harold Landry's speed just yet off the edge. He's affecting plays even when he's not hitting the QB. Will Philly be better equipped for that speed off the edge?
Well, Philly has two good tackles in Peters and Lane Johnson. Probably both would be considered in the top three at their position in the league. So the one thing about Landry is, while he has shown quite a bit in terms of just pure explosive edge burst and speed, he hasn't shown much more than that. And it'll be interesting to see, and not being an offensive line coach, I don't know how Jeff Stoutland, who's one of the best O-line coaches in the league in Philly, will have his tackles handle that. But Landry, as dynamic as he is off the edge, is still going to need to be more than that as his career progresses, but he certainly is explosive off the edge.
Greg, the Philadelphia Eagles, the next opponent for the Titans this coming Sunday. Carson Wentz is back. What did you think of his first start since the injury?
Solid. I thought that overall there were snaps where he did not eliminate and isolate as quickly and efficiently as he did last season. I thought at times his ball placement was not quite what it needed to be, but I would have expected those two things, Jonathan. I think more importantly, we know that Alshon Jeffrey's been cleared for contact this week, but there's no guarantee he will play. So the Eagles have been playing with major limitations at wide receiver. And last week, two-thirds of their snaps, we just talked about the Titans in the previous segment, two-thirds of the Eagles' snaps had either two or three tight ends on the field. And they did a lot of up-tempo, no-huddle tempo. So I think you have to prepare for that and decide how you're going to play that, because one thing the Eagles do exceptionally well as any team in the league, they are really multiple with their formations out of two and three tight end personnel.
Are they splitting Ertz and Goddard out at the same time?
Yep. they'll do that. And they have the third tight end is Josh Perkins, who's actually a kind of a tall, lanky wide receiver type build, even though he's a tight end, and he can run a little bit. Now, he's probably not a name known to most. He's not a big time player in terms of production in his few years in the league, but he's a wide receiver type body and he can run.
How have the Eagles used Jay Ajayi? I know whenever he's been healthy, of course, but when he's healthy and he's implemented in that offense since they traded for him, what's been the approach to their backfield with him and Clement and the other options that they have? Sproles is another.
Well, when Jay Ajayi is healthy, he is, for want of a better term, their feature back. Now, they don't play an offense where one back necessarily gets 18, 19, or 20 carries. That can happen in a given week, but that's not their approach. What I will say about their run game is it's very rich in detail. They have a really diverse run game with a lot of concepts, a lot of principles, a very good O-line. Most people know about Jason Kelce, their offensive center. We mentioned their two tackles, Peters and Lane Johnson, but their right guard, Brandon Brooks, is a top three guard in the NFL. He's really big. He's very light on his feet. So they have a very good run-blocking O-line.
When teams have success against Philadelphia, what generally works? What's the opposing game plan against the Eagles?
Two things I think are critical. I think you can rush the quarterback against the Eagles, even though their O-line is strong. I think in the past couple of weeks, they've struggled a bit in pass protection, particularly versus stunts, particularly versus different kinds of defensive front movement, which, by the way, Tennessee is very, very good at. The other thing, and it may not be something the Titans can do well this week. We don't know that yet, but teams at times have been able to throw the ball against the Eagles because the Eagles are a zone-based defense. Oftentimes, their outside corners play with a fairly big cushion, giving up some throws. So you can throw the ball against them at times. Now, as I said, whether the Titans can take advantage of that, that remains to be seen.
Greg Cosell is with us, presented by the Huffacre Group of Keller Williams Realty. Let's go around the league a bit, Greg. Buffalo beats Minnesota 27-6.
You had that game picked that way, didn't you?
No.
Hun's a huge Bills guy. He's been high on them all year.
In fact,
loves
Greg,
him. Loves Nate Peterman.
I'm giving the scoreboard in games like third quarter of Titans-Jags on Titans Radio, and I say this score, and Mike Keith turned around to me and did a double take because he thought I had the score backwards. Seriously, like I said, 27-0, and he looked at me like, "Are you serious? The Bills
are
beating."
Doesn't he know, Jonathan, that you don't make mistakes?
I'm not going to say that. It had me worried for a moment. I went and pulled up some of the stats, and I'm noticing Allen had two touchdown rushes in this game. Kirk Cousins, though, it appeared, had a terrible performance.
He did. He had a very tough performance. But do you remember, I think it might even have been before preseason, you guys asked me for, I think, eight players who I thought were, you know, guys to take a look at as we started with the season. And one of them I mentioned was Matt Milano for the Bills, who was the AFC Player of the Week this week, by the way, in that game against the Vikings. But I think the big story for most people is Josh Allen at this point. I mean, obviously Kirk Cousins did not play well. We know that. It was a very bad performance by the Vikings offense. But I think no one expected a rookie quarterback, Josh Allen, is not viewed as a precision player, to go into Minnesota and to be able to function. And this, to me, is why I love coaching more than anything and why I'm such a believer in coaching. I thought the Bills' offensive coaching staff did such an outstanding job with their game plan approach to really help Josh Allen. A ton of screens, a ton of flat routes, throw the ball one-on-one on the perimeter, which requires no reading. So I thought they did such a good job to get this kid comfortable. And at this point in his career, he's going to run a lot, but he's very good at it.
Greg, I don't know that I've ever been as impressed with an NFL team through three games as I have the Rams so far, three games into this season, offensively and defensively, what they've been able to do. That they get Minnesota in the Thursday night game this week. What's impressed you most about what LA does offensively?
Oh, boy. Offensively, they are so good with their concepts. I think what they do formationally, I think what they do with their route concepts, I think how they use their back in the pass game. There's so many elements to what they do offensively. I think the way they mix and match tempo, And I think that Jared Goff is becoming to be is starting to become a little more movement based. And when I say movement based, I don't mean running out of the pocket, but I mean his ability to move a little bit and make what we would consider second reaction late in the down throws. He's advancing in that regard. So I think that. And now you're talking about the individual players, the weapons they have. We know about Gurley. Brandon Cooks has really been a nice fit there. Cooper Kupp is a terrific slot receiver. And Robert Woods, who was really not thought of as much until he got to the Rams, and now within the context of that offense, is really an important piece.
Let's go back to the AFC South. The Colts, we mentioned they gave the Eagles a scare. When you watch how they're playing with Andrew Luck, do you sense that with some of the schemes they're using that they're protecting him in some way with his shoulder, or is it all systems go for that Colts offense?
I would not say it's all systems go. I think that it's predominantly short to intermediate stuff. I don't think he's been really airing it out, and I don't think you've seen that by design. I mean, they've taken a few shot plays through the first three games, but not too many. He missed one the week before, and then I don't know if he just didn't feel comfortable turning it loose, but he had T.Y. Hilton over the top of the defense on a shot play, and he just didn't turn it loose. So, but I think they're playing right now to what they probably feel is a little bit of a limitation.
Let's stick on the theme of short to intermediate passing, and let's go to Dallas. Their offense, Dak Prescott, 34 attempts, 181 yards passing this past week. Now, that's becoming the norm. He has over 25 attempts, doesn't have 200 yards passing in these games. What is the approach in Dallas offensively right now, specifically when they do allow Prescott to look downfield?
Well, that's a good question. I think you're dealing with a lot of issues that are snowballing right now with the Cowboys. They don't have a lot of weapons. And Prescott, he's an interesting player. He was pristine his rookie year in the pocket because of the team he was on, the O-line, the run game. I would say right now he's not very comfortable in the pocket. There's too much unnecessary movement. There's times he creates his own pressure, and he loses the opportunity to make some throws that are there. I would say that going along with that is he's not very patient. He's anticipating pressure. And when you anticipate pressure, it's very difficult to play quarterback. So what that leads to is he abandons his progressions, he breaks down prematurely, and the passing game breaks down. And even at his best, he hasn't shown that he's an anticipatory thrower, so he's not a guy that is necessarily delivering the ball early. So he has to wait. He's sort of a see-it, throw-it quarterback, and that's not working well now with what this offense is and with the receivers that he has.
And New England's offense, they are desperate for help at wide receiver right now, especially when they're not getting production from Sonny Michel on first and second down. What area is New England struggling in where they typically have success? And what's different when you watch that offense this year compared to years past?
Well, I think, let me answer it this way. We have to be careful about making a big judgment like that, because okay, I thought that what the Lions did this week with Matt Patricia, knowing that team well, was just absolutely brilliant. They had a specific game plan, particularly on third down, which featured seven defensive backs. And without getting into all the nuance, because people won't be able to see it, obviously, but they took away White and Gronkowski on third down. And right now, with no Edelman for another week, and who knows about the status of Josh Gordon, right now, if you can take away White and Gronkowski on third down, you make it very difficult. And when you play with seven defensive backs, they doubled Gronk, they had a safety, not a linebacker, on James White, and then they were still able to play man-to-man with corners on the three wide receivers. So they did, and they had some other elements to that concept, but they did such a specific job that Matt Patricia did, because he knows that, for instance, I don't think Miami will do something like that this week, but they really understood how to stop that offense. So that was a specific game.
And Greg, you're not going to have to answer questions about the Detroit run game not getting 100 yards from a rusher. That actually happened. Kerryon Johnson.
Well, now what will be interesting, Jonathan, is whether he becomes the back, or whether LeGarrette Blount still gets meaningful carries, or whether they'll transition to Johnson. They did draft him in the second round.
Yeah, and he moves the chains, Greg. I know you know that, but he had eight first downs.
I thought the thing that's been a little surprising to me is I think he showed some juice. But in college, I didn't think he was that kind of back, but I thought he was as tough as and competitive as there was. He will grind out yards.
Greg Cosell, he joins us twice a week, for two segments once a week, every Wednesday, presented by the Huffaker Group. Greg, thank you so much. And I wish you were coming in town for this Philadelphia game. I know you'll be watching.
I'll be at the NovaCare Center in Philly.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Thank you, man. We'll catch up next week.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yep.